you look at your outline, okay, we talked about point A, the Buddha's purpose for stating the truth of suffering as the first of the Four Noble Truths. And we're going to go on to point B, the actual meditation on unsatisfactory experiences. So we're going to be talking a lot about undesirable experiences. So it's really important that you have a good attitude when you're doing this. Okay? And to realize that the Buddha taught all about these all about the undesirable experiences so that we will realize where we're at and thereby develop a determination to free ourselves from it. Okay? So when you start meditating on this stuff, don't get depressed. Don't sit there and think, oh, you know, there's the suffering of this and the unsatisfactoriness of this and this misery and all this stuff, you know. Oh, you know. Don't get depressed by it, but see it as now I have the ability to look at my experience with clear and open eyes and thereby recognize my potential to change it and have a better existence. Okay? So don't get depressed and down by all these things, although it is a bit sobering. Okay? I mean, it's definitely sobering, but we need to get sobered up. Yeah? Because we've been basically kind of skipping through life, kind of, you know, enjoying the merry-go-round, having a good time, and, you know, it's like we want to have a good time and we want to have a little Dharma practice in there, too, for good luck. You know, or for, you know, to make us well-rounded, a little bit of Dharma practice has some spice, you know. But once we start looking more seriously, we'll begin to understand that what we thought was really fun and games is actually kind of a drag. You know, and it's actually rather unpleasant and unsatisfactory compared to what we really could be. Yeah? So it's definitely a sobering kind of meditation that makes us cut through a lot of our fantasies and a lot of our daydreams. Okay? But I think for me personally, it has brought an incredible amount of honesty. It's like, okay, by admitting all these undesirable aspects of my existence, at least I can be honest now. You know, I don't need to go through life of, you know, like, isn't everything hunky and dory? It can just, you know, kind of say, okay, look, this is what's really going on now. Yeah. So it's kind of overcoming denial. And for those of you who are familiar with therapy, denial is one of our favorite things. Okay, let's pretend it doesn't exist, and then maybe it won't. Okay. So here we're going to start looking at different unsatisfactory experiences. So first of all, we're going to think about the unsatisfactory experiences of cyclic existence in general, and then we'll think about the unsatisfactory experiences of the specific realms of existence. Yeah, so we're really going to be very thorough here. So when we think about the unsatisfactory experiences of cyclic existence in general, the first one is that there's no certainty about anything. Yeah? And there's no reaching a stage in which we have security. Yeah? And we're always looking for security in our job, in our relationships, in our health. In everything, we want it just to be secure, unchanging, you know, let's get it settled and fixed up and then we can go on. But the very nature of our life is that it doesn't work that way, that there's no certainty in anything because anything is always constantly changing. Yeah, constantly. So our health, you know, there's no certainty at all in our health. We work so hard, you know, to kind of be healthy as if, okay, now I'm healthy, now I can, you know, put that on the back burner and go do some fun things. But we're never in the state of, you know, perfect health where we have some security in it. Yeah, it's just, it's non-existent. Same with financial security. We work so hard to get financial security. Who has financial security? Even you have billions of dollars, is that secure? I mean, it's not. You can have billions of dollars today and nothing tomorrow. You know, many people that happens to. The stock market goes down, they get arrested for fraudulent dealings. Somebody, you know, rips open their mattress and steals $1 million in it. I mean, there's no certainty in any of this, that any of it is going to last. Yeah. Relationships also, there's no certainty. You know, you've probably heard me mention this before, but I find it so interesting in America how we want to get our relationships clear. You know, we want certainty. Are we or are we not going to have this relationship? I mean, have you ever had people say that to you? You know, are we going to have a relationship or aren't we? Or you've said that to other people. It's like, okay, look, there's two choices, yes and no. If it's no, let's get that straight, forget it. I'm not going to talk to you again. If it's yes, then we have this contract, and you fulfill your part, I'll fulfill mine, and that's it. Okay, we'll live happily ever after. Or else, right? But, you know, there's no certainty in any of that. Yeah. What do you mean? We can decide how our relationship is going to be. Maybe we're going to decide. We're going to decide, and then it's going to be like that forever, always the same way, completely certain and predictable. I mean, it doesn't work like that. We're always relating to people, and relationships are always changing. So you might make a lot of decisions about how this relationship is going to be, but that doesn't mean it's going to be like that. And that doesn't mean you have any control over it, because everything's changing all the time. Yeah? So I think this part of us, our mind, that like, you know, let's just get this clear in the relationship, you know, and we're going to get this settled, okay? I'm going to confront whoever this was in my past, and we're just going to settle this once and for all and get it straight and get our relationship put in perspective. Then I'm going to live my life. I don't know anybody who's been able to do that. Huh? Relationships are always changing. You know, they're good sometimes and they're not so good at other times. And you don't always have control over them. Completely uncertain. Okay? So what we're getting at here is that the uncertainty of our health, of our finances, of our relationships, of everything, yeah, the fact that it's also changeable and uncertain, that is unsatisfactory. I mean, that's a cause for, yeah, it's a cause to want to be free. I mean, it's not a cause, but it's like looking at that becomes a cause to want to be free from it. Okay? Because that's the very nature of our existence, is that everything's uncertain. Yeah. And I think that's just, it's so valuable just to think about that, just to really imbue our mind with how uncertain things are. Not in the sense of making us apprehensive and nervous and ill at ease, okay? Because that's looking at uncertainty from a really deluded point of view. But just recognizing the changeability in things, then having a flexible attitude. Then the mind can be flexible. Yeah, we can, what is it, flow with the, go with the flow and roll with the punches. And, you know, I mean, you can just kind of, things can go. But our mind that wants, you know, security, certainty, blocks, you know, categories, fixing everything up, you know, getting everything straightened, put a bow on it and shove it in the corner, okay, just doesn't work like that. Yeah, so if we can look at that and recognize that change is part of our life, then we can relax into the change instead of fighting it. Because the apprehension, the fear, the anxiety is fighting the reality of the change. Yeah. But if we really accept that change is just the ground upon which our whole life is built, we can relax a little bit about it. And at the same time, recognize that we can free ourselves from this unsatisfactory state. I find this incredible. I mean, this is really sobering to meditate on. You know? And you can just see it so well. I mean, look at the people in Yugoslavia. Yeah, talk about uncertainty. The way people's lives were 1 year ago, the way they are now. Yeah, I mean, one person's life completely, total change. You look in World War II people's lives from one day to the other, how changeable. Everything just totally changes. The family, the finances, the environment, the health, everything. Yeah. And so just to recognize that this is entirely within the realm of possibility in our own lives. So even though things might seem to be consistent, in actual fact, they're changing all the time. And they're, you know, we don't have such great ability to control and predict them all. Because it's functioning a lot as a result of our past karma. Okay, then the second aspect of the suffering of cyclic existence in general is that there's no satisfaction. Okay, so I can't get no satisfaction. He knew what he was talking about. Okay. Maybe he didn't understand completely well what he was saying, but, you know, but it's true, because if you look, in everything we do, all the activities we engage in, we try and find satisfaction in them. And we can't. You know, it's like there's no lasting satisfaction in anything we do. And I think for me, when I first met the Dharma, this was one of the things that convinced me that the Buddha really knew what he was talking about, is that when I looked at my life and I saw how, even though I thought everything was pretty okay and going along okay and looking on the up and up, how actually I was totally dissatisfied and how everything in my life just bred more and more dissatisfaction. And when I really kind of was honest and able to look at that in my life, I said, Buddha knows something about me that I don't know. You know, this guy knows what he's talking about. Yeah? And if you looked, it's just like everything, this constant search for pleasure and never having satisfaction. And so this is where the mindfulness practice is so important, is becoming mindful of all the dissatisfaction, the continued unfulfilled grasping. From the time we wake up in the morning and we're unsatisfied because we didn't get to sleep long enough. Okay, then we're unsatisfied because the alarm clock doesn't sound nice. Okay, then we're unsatisfied because the coffee's too hot, or it's too sweet, or it gets cold, or it ends and you want more. And so it's like everything we do looking for satisfaction, it doesn't bring any lasting satisfaction. All the sense pleasures. Yeah, you might get some pleasure from going to an art gallery or hearing a good conference, a concert, you know, but at the end, you're dissatisfied. Yeah, either it lasted too long and you can't wait to leave, or it didn't last long enough and you want some more, or even it lasted just right, but after a while you're bored again and you need some more. Yeah, all the meals we've eaten, all the food, have we ever been satisfied? If you've been satisfied, you wouldn't have to eat again. Okay? But we eat, and we're full, and then we're later on dissatisfied. We need to eat again. Yeah? So you look at any kind of sense pleasure we have, you know, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, has any of it brought any lasting satisfaction? I mean, making love, having an orgasm, does that bring you lasting satisfaction? If it did, why do you have to keep doing it again? You know, it's like anything we do that we get pleasure from, it in and of itself doesn't bring lasting satisfaction, because again, we have to do something. Again, we have to make more effort to have pleasure. Yeah. Okay? So just this constant dissatisfaction all the time. All the time. So this is a big function of attachment. Yeah, the more attached we are, the more dissatisfied we are. So you can really see how attachment is the cause of unsatisfactory experiences, why attachment has to be eliminated, because it just breeds constant dissatisfaction all the time. You know, we're dissatisfied with ourselves. We aren't good enough. We aren't this enough. We aren't that enough. We're dissatisfied with others. We wish they were a little bit more this or a little bit less that. We're dissatisfied with the government. We're dissatisfied with everything. Yeah, when you look at it, you know, nothing is perfect. We want it to be different. We're unhappy. We're disgruntled. Yeah. So just that whole situation of living in constant dissatisfaction with the mind that is constantly seeking satisfaction and never getting it and using the wrong method to get it. Yeah. So this is like the tragedy of samsara, is that here are all these sentient beings just wanting to be happy, trying so desperately to be happy, ourselves and others, you know, trying desperately to be happy. But because we don't have the right method, we keep thinking the method is sense objects, external things, external people, external something. And we keep seeking it, and we're perpetually dissatisfied. Yeah? So even though we all want happiness, the method we're using is incorrect, we don't get the result. I mean, that's samsara. This is the tragedy about it. You know? And this is why we can't say that other people are bad, and we can't say that we ourselves are bad people. Unsatisfied. Sorry. Return to manufacturer of the defective product here. Okay, how I'm always unsatisfied, how my attachment breeds my unsatisfaction, dissatisfaction. So we can look at it that way. We can look at it more from a bodhisattva way about how this is the plight of all sentient beings. This is the tragedy of samsara. This is why becoming a Buddha is so important, so that we can overcome this in ourselves and others. We can look at it in terms of refuge, you know, because once we recognize the kindness of the Buddha in pointing out to us this whole dysfunctional dynamic, yeah, then this incredible feeling of trust and confidence in the Buddha comes up. Yeah, because the Buddha was so able to just say, look, you're constantly dissatisfied. It's due to attachment. And here's what you do to get rid of the attachment. Here's what you do to get rid of the ignorance. Yeah, and when we understand that, even understanding it a little bit intellectually, that incredible faith comes in the Buddha. Because we really understand that, you know, Buddha's wisdom and also the Buddha's kindness in turning the Dharma wheel and teaching us. Okay? So just this one point, you see, we can look at it in many different ways, developing, you know, many kinds of understandings through this. Communicating. Then the third unsatisfactory experience in psychic existence is having to abandon our body again and again, having to die again and again. Yeah. Now, if we all look in our lives, you know, we know our death is definite. It's not the thing on the number one thing of what we want to do today. You know, it's not what we look forward to. And if we think about how distasteful the idea of separating from this body is now, imagine doing that over and over and over and over and over again from beginningless time. You know, I mean, imagine just this whole thing of leaving the body and the whole circumstance of aging and getting sick and dying, all those things that, you know, that whole circumstance that leads up to death and how unpleasant that is. And then remember that it's not just this lifetime. This has happened millions and millions and trillions of times before to us. Yeah. And it's unsatisfactory. You know, it's something that is just, if we had our druthers, if we had our choice. We would rather not die. We would rather not be in this whole position of having to die. Yeah. But you see, as long as we're under the influence of ignorance, anger, and attachment, we don't have any choice in the matter. Yeah? We may want not to die, but we can't do anything about it as long as our mind is ignorant. So this is the whole reason for gaining wisdom, the whole reason for eliminating the grasping at true existence. Okay? So not only is dying again and again a drag, but the next unsatisfactory experience of samsara is getting born again and again and again. Okay? So it's like, we can't just say death is bad, but birth is great, because you don't have death if you don't have birth. Real interesting thing in our society, isn't it? You know, birth is like we celebrate it, and death is we mourn. But actually, they both go together, because as soon as you're born, you're going to die. And as soon as you die, you're going to get reborn. Yeah, so why do we celebrate one and mourn the other? I mean, we could celebrate when people die, because then they'll get reborn. And we could mourn when people get reborn, because then they're going to die. Or we could look at the whole thing and say the whole thing stinks. Yeah? And that's what we're trying to get to, this determination to be free by saying, look, the whole thing just, you know, let's start from scratch. Yeah? This business needs a drastic overhaul of, you know, the management structure. We need to really start all over again. So this is what the determination to be free is about. Yeah? So instead of just, you know, mourning death, let's look and recognize that birth also is no great experience to go through. Yeah? And so here, in the scriptures, they go into great detail about how unsatisfactory it is getting born. And they talk about, you know, how, and it's quite interesting because it's very different than a lot of modern theory. A lot of modern theory says that being in the womb is so comforting and secure, and, you know, that's why everybody curls up in fetal position afterwards, you know, because they want to be back in the womb where they felt safe. In the scriptures, it says that actually being in the womb is quite uncomfortable. Yeah? Because, you know, when your mother eats very spicy food, you feel it as a baby. You don't understand what's going on. When your mother goes out jogging, you know, you're boom, 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 too. That just the whole experience of being in the womb is quite uncomfortable. You know, it's kind of claustrophobic. You're shut in. There's no space to move. You know, kind of you're kicking and so forth. You have no real understanding of what's going on inside with your experience, you know. You don't know when you're in the womb, oh, I'm in the womb and this is what's happening. You're just having all these experiences and not knowing how to understand it. And then at some point, this whole closed-in environment, you get expelled from, you know, when the mother starts having labor pains, you know, and then the muscles start pushing down on the baby. And, you know, they say that it's quite painful for the baby, and then, you know, the opening to the womb is quite small and the baby's head's quite big, and that, you know, coming out through that narrow opening, they say it's like being crushed between two mountains, you know, you're just a feeling of being scrunched. And then you come out into the world and it's cold and there's air, and what do? They whack you on the bottom and turn you upside down, you know, and sprinkle drops in your eyes. Yeah? So they say that actually, you know, that just the whole birth process itself and you know, the whole process of being in the womb and then the birth process, quite uncomfortable, quite painful, quite confusing. Yeah? We can't remember it. Actually, I have one friend who remembers being in the womb because his mother slipped at some point and fell down some stairs, and he remembers feeling that. Yeah. So I guess some people do have that memory, that, so this is kind of to tear down again our speculation about, you know, wonder is returning to the womb. You know how we have this sometimes? You know, oh, if I could just be in the womb again, if I could just be a baby again, a baby is carefree, you know, doesn't worry about the IRS and this stuff. to realize that that's not fun and games. You know, that's not something to return to find lasting security. That it in and of itself is quite painful and confusing. Yeah. Okay, and then the next unsatisfactory experience is our changing status. Okay, that we're always changing status. So we go from being rich and famous to, you know, being poor and ignoble. We go from having top quality job to living on the streets. Yeah? Our status is always changing. We go from being respected and praised to being deprecated. You know, we go from being born in the God realms with incredible pleasure deluxe to being born in the hell realms. And then back to the God realms. And it's like just this repeated changing status. They say we go from eating nectar in the God realms to eating molten iron in the hell realms. It's like, you know, change of diet. Yeah? But it's this lack of status. You know, this changing status. Again, this lack of security, this lack of settledness, this lack of something there to hold on to. And if you look in samsara, everything again, changing status. Look at your own life. How you've changed status. How you change status in one person's eyes. One person loves you 1 year, can't stand you the next year. Then loves you the next year, then can't stand you the next year. You know? I mean, we're rich 1 year, poor the next. Rich another year, poor the next. Yeah, famous 1 year, you know, trash the next. And this is just what samsara is all about. Yeah, and it's not only our own experience, it's the experience of all beings. And it's really quite, you know, I think this is really important to meditate on, you know, to see in our own life and to recognize that this is what everybody else experiences, you know, because that's the foundation of gaining compassion. Yeah, when we meditate on this in terms of ourself, we gain the determination to be free. When we meditate on it, that everybody else has exactly the same experience, then we gain real deep compassion. And then the last unsatisfactory experience, the last one, is that we're continually alone, that there's no friend that can intervene and protect and go through all these things with us. So when we're born alone. Okay? When you're sick alone. You might say, no, I'm not sick alone. I'm in this hospital with, you know, 500 other people who are sick. But you experience your own suffering alone. You know, we have no friend in the sense that nobody else can come in and take some of our suffering away. Nobody can, we might have a lot of friends, so to speak, but nobody can remove our suffering of birth. Nobody can remove our suffering when we're sick. Nobody can remove our suffering, you know, when we're depressed. Yeah? So we're born alone. We die alone. Yeah? And so this is, again, you know, when we think about this, that this is just the state of existence. It's nothing to get emotionally frantic about, because this is just reality, the way things are. But it's something to recognize and to make a determination to free ourselves from through generating wisdom. Okay? And when we look at it and recognize this is everybody else's situation, then we gain compassion. So these six unsatisfactory experiences of cyclic existence in general, they're quite important, you know, to go through repeatedly, to remind ourselves of a lot. And I think this acts as a really good counteractive measure for when our minds are getting flighty and excited, you know, like when you get all excited and jazzed up about something, you know, you meditate on these six and the mind kind of settles down like, okay, got to get the feet back down on the ground again. Yeah. So it's a real good antidote to this kind of speedy, excited, distracted mind.
to meditate on these. Okay? So like I said before, don't get depressed when you think about them, but just recognize this is the reality of cyclic existence. This is what I experience under the influence of anger, attachment, and ignorance. And it's also possible to be free of this. That's why the Buddha taught this, so that we can be free of it.